Good now, everyone. There's Daryl as service, and on the show today, we have a bunch of stuff. Look, if you didn't know, then that means you weren't looking at the message center, so do it. That's the whole point, man. You've been watching us for years. Look at your message center. Sheesh.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for an audio podcast exclusive interview.
You're fussing at people right out of the gate. That it's like they feel attacked when they start watching the show. They're what did I do?
Oh man.
I mean, you're right, but what did I do?
Yeah. Should we just get on with it? Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
those people that say stop bantering and get on with it are already calling in. Right, on with the show. Our first message for the day is Yammer app for Microsoft Teams, MC209916, with a whole lot of description, lot to say about it.
Sorry, that's sarcasm, right, Daryl? Because there's not a lot of detail at all.
There
isn't.
This message. There isn't. But it's I considered making this the headline for this week's episode, because it is actually a big deal being able to bring Yammer into Teams, not leave Teams to go to Yammer. Don't think it'll ever be the other way around. You go to Yammer,
right.
you don't have to leave Yammer to use Teams. But
probably not.
No. And it's called Communities. So it is going to be that Communities experience that you may not yet have in your tenant. Hmm.
Yep.
But pretty easy to add. Have you added it to your own Teams experience at work?
I have not. I have not yet, and I'm not sure I will at this point. I think, and this is kind of a point to make here, is while we can look at this, and I'll be brief, but is that this isn't for everybody. You know, if your organization is not using Yammer, then why are you adding the Yammer app into Teams?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there are definite use cases for Yammer, but if you're not using it right now, then don't add it. Simple.
Exactly.
I don't know.
No, it's fair to say, because if there's not a lot of action in there, then it doesn't matter whether it's in Teams or not. Although if you are wanting to explore this again as a org-wide way of having conversations, then yeah, maybe that's one way to help it along. Just as a quick look-see at how this is done, we have the Yammer app is within the store, so we've got a. Here we go. We look at our apps that are already there. More apps will bring you into the store. You don't have to go searching for it; it's up near the top. But if you look for either Communities or Yammer, you're going to find it. Now, under the drop-down menu, you do have the option to add it to just the team. But if you just hit Add, then that's going to add it to the side rail, and there you go. You've got Communities. Now it will be available to you if your organization allows you to add apps, or it's on the sanctioned apps or approved apps. Apart from that, there you go. It's the new Yammer experience, cleaner, easier to use, one feed to rule them all, etc. Anyway, on with the show, I think.
No, thanks for that demo. I think everyone just... know that you just go to the applications in Teams and be able to add it, and there it is straight away. So it's nice to have it right there on the left-hand rail and get that experience. But again, if you're not using it yet, that's fine. Maybe you can find a use case in your organization for Yammer, and this will be a great fit for you.
Cool. All right, up next.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a few of these again, and it's getting a little confusing. Where, some of these messages are being updated, but they're not being stamped as being updated. Okay, I can see in the title here, updated feature command bar menu updates for Power Automate. So we covered this last week when it was updated, that they have said our rollout's going to be a little slower than expected.
That's right.
But what I've noticed with a few of the updates this week is that maybe they've changed some spelling mistake or reworded something. So it has changed the update date, therefore it is bumped up into the order of our messages, but there's no visible or easily visible change. So this is another one. Do you see anything different in this one?
Nope. Not really. I mean, maybe the bolding of targeted release, but I can't remember. Right. So other than that, nope. So on to the next one.
All right, yeah. So we'll do that a few times in this episode. This one is interesting. Third-party online meeting providers in Outlook for Android MC209945. Have you read much about this yet, Daniel?
I read a little bit about this. I'm a little conflicted, as it were, when we start talking about allowing other online meeting providers in Outlook. I don't understand why. I mean, I do understand why, but I don't understand why. The reason why I don't understand why is Microsoft promoting other services for allowing those meetings when they already have several online meeting applications? And I just really don't get it. I know, you know, you want to be interop with other stuff and be friendly and be nice in the community of technology. Yes, yes, yes. But are they just as nice back? No. So I don't know. Maybe this is the golden rule time, but I feel like I really don't understand why they're doing this. But great. Now you can have an add-in installed in your mailbox by your Exchange administrator and be able to have a Zoom meeting instead of Teams or Skype. Great.
I think it's a bit like the mentality with Google Drive, Dropbox, etc. You know, bringing in those third-party storage applications, and in fact, you know, even putting their apps within the competitors' app stores. That it is about just being where people are working to make it easier to transition between, so that the other services that are still part of the work experience are there. I did sort of sometimes, as I was reading through this message, I forgot that, okay, we are talking about just Outlook. This is not a Zoom meeting in Teams. Blue Jeans meetings in Teams. Although I did read somewhere in the news that while Zoom never has any plans to provide telephony, there is a partnership forming of sorts with Zoom and Teams that you can have a Zoom meeting, but Teams will provide the telephony behind it. We'll find the link somewhere. It's interesting to read.
I would say so.
Well, so this, you know, back to this update, it's going to be rolling out late April. That's now. It is just to Outlook for Android at this stage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just think of it as, the other thing it was, it's not something that you're going to be able to do for yourself. So there are some apps that you can install within Outlook yourself. It's got to be done by your admin, because they make the connection between the third-party service for meetings and Outlook itself or your mailbox. If you are going to do that as an organization, then of course you're going to tell people about it. You're going to provide information about how and what to use and that. But yeah, shall we move to that next interesting one?
Yes. A new feature, Continuous Access Evaluation, CAE, MC210034. Daryl, this is all about making sure the proper people have access to resources, right? When making sure that they have an account, that it's, you know, not disabled, it's that MFA is enabled, right? But haven't we been able to do that already?
Yeah, I think the thing about this access, it's more of a security measure. So what I've seen in the past is sometimes you will disable someone's account, their password, or you'll make a change, and it takes some time for that to take effect. And like what I'm reading here in this change is that there's a access token which can be refreshed over a certain period of time. It's used to be, or currently it's still configurable for those who do want to use this for conditional access and stuff like that. So, you know, I've even heard some who want to dial it right down to 90 seconds. But that sort of stuff actually does impact the user experience, especially if you have to re-auth your MFA to say, yeah, it's still here. I'm still here. Hang on. Just wait a moment. Let me get my mobile out and go, yeah, I'm still here. yeah. So they're going in the other direction, and that they're going to standardize the length of the token to 24 hours. Hoorah. But they're using this different mechanism for saying, please check again. Please check again, because we've just deleted their account, or we've just re-prompted and revoked tokens for users. So this happens up to 15 minutes. Could be sooner. But yeah, it's a good measure for security, at least.
I agree.
So that's...
Yeah, I'm liking this one. I mean, is it great? Is it perfect? I'm sure we could poke some holes in it, but actually, I'm liking this one. I like to be able to say, okay, here are the items that we're going to be detecting, and it could be that during that time, we'll make sure we'll be proactive. I'm okay with that, especially for organizations that really didn't pay attention to this and really weren't configuring it well for them. So I'm okay with this. I'm liking it.
When's it changing?
Don't know.
I think you have to go through to the blog post.
You do.
I did read in the blog post somewhere. Like, right? No, it should definitely be in the message. I remember reading somewhere that they are taking this cautiously, that they are just starting off with these 5 use cases, and it's about making sure that they get the change from 1 hour to 24 hours for their token length right. But they aren't going to touch those of you using conditional access with configurable token lifetimes yet, because that would just be bad.
Right.
We as an organization have chosen to configure this lifetime ourselves. No. You're going to 24 hours now.
we'll take it over now.
Yeah.
We'll take it from here, sir. Yeah.
We got this. let's go. Moving on.
Yeah.
This one, new and updated reports for Microsoft 365 Admin Center MC210158. I'm interested in usage stats and this new way of looking at the same stats. understanding remote work elements. It's a new card that appears in the Admin Center, which you're not going to see unless you're an admin or an admin reader role. And this is not really... Exactly. Helpful unless you've given your change manager adoption specialist access in that regard. Might be useful to an admin, but take a look at it. So if I just
we are big fans around here about usage reports and getting some insights as to how users are utilizing the product. So It's good. What I do like seeing is some progress here. So I like the giving the love and attention to this area. So it's good.
Well, the examples I've given here, I know that they're drawing from it's a reframing of stats. And what they've got is email activity, Yammer user activity, Microsoft Teams activity. What does activity mean? And I think, if you click in there, of course, you're going to get the rundown of what that means. But at a glance, what does that mean? Microsoft 365 apps usage, which is your online office and anything in your app launcher. So it's an at a glance thing. Teams activity is up for some reason. email activity down, I don't know. It's good, but the other part to it is these other graphs. Oh, they have changed it. Okay, so last night when I was looking at this, they had an activity report here, which is for M365 apps, and if you have a closer look there, there's Outlook, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Teams. Okay. Interesting choice of all of them. Of course, Outlook and Teams are kind of high there. Activity graph in terms of active users, that actually had the same wording at some point last night.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, there it is. It's doubled up there. Activity user graph, and not a lot more to say. So it'll be available mid-April, which is now.
Last week was mid-April. So
Should I have a look? No, we don't have time.
No, we don't have time.
Go look for yourself. You know, I started the show with that sentiment. Look for yourself. Go look for yourself.
I don't know if I... All right, moving
I'm
right along.
I'm in trouble with Daniel now.
Yes, okay. You are. You're grounded.
Hey, right, it's our headline. Take it. Oh, no, you're just drinking water.
This was your next one?
Yeah. Well, what did you have?
I had the Power Platform Data Loss Prevention.
I don't even have that. So you tell us all about it, man.
Well, let's talk about it then. Updates coming to the Power Platform Data Loss Prevention. This is MC210568. And starting April 22nd, which was last week, it was published April 23rd, by the way. So starting April 22nd, the Power Apps and Power Automate DLP policies will support new features. There's three new features here, ability to block connectors, to configure DLP policies in the admin center, and easily classify HTTP connectors. I won't dive too deep in here for two reasons. One, and there was a hint for the number two when I just said, number one is we're not seeing it on screen, so I don't want to talk too much about it. There's a lot of content here to go through. But the second reason is that this will be our deep dive conversation with an expert, and it'll be part of the audio podcast. So make sure you're subscribed at messagecenter.show so that you get the latest episode when it's released this week. We'll include, like I said, a deep dive on this very topic. We'll dive in and talk about all the particulars and why it's important.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you don't have it, to be honest. I'm guessing it doesn't say anything about geography here. So I'm not sure why you wouldn't have received it. Maybe next week, I guess. But you should. I thought you would have received this. So anyway, we'll dive deep into this with an expert and really discuss this topic in detail. And we just happened to have that expert in the chat room live with us on the show. So thank you for joining us, but we'll definitely dive in. So moving right along.
Yes. So the headline, which, you know, it's a maybe is a smallish thing to some, but I think it's a good helpful thing to others. That it's a new feature within SharePoint Online. You will be able to choose stock images to use with your modern SharePoint sites. That's MC210572. This means that when you go to your image selector where you might normally upload stuff or go into a document library where you've already got images stored, you will have an additional choice for stock images. And I've always found this interesting. Like, you go to web search, and I don't use that option very often, but it's in there where it says you can search for images, but just be careful that these might not be royalty free. They could be copyright. So we'll provide the facility to find them.
we'll provide you the way to search.
But it's completely over to you. So now they are providing something which is royalty free, stock images. I wonder where the source is. I feel like they've done like a deal with someone like Unsplash or something else like that to be able to bring them in and surface them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not a lot more to say about it. Just that it's going to be useful for those of us that haven't found different sources like that or haven't got our own photography. Targeted release customers, it'll be mid-April, so it should be in mind right now. Again, I could look, but go look for yourself. and rolling it to standard release by mid-May.
Good Done. Stuff.
Yep. Oh, hey, just as a side question, what do you use for images if you need to decorate your SharePoint modern sites?
For my, well, until you got to the SharePoint modern sites part, I would say my own. I take photos everywhere I go, and I use my own content when I'm doing graphics for, you know, anything that I'm doing. If I'm talking about intranet, the graphics that I use typically is from a service that the organization has purchased rights to.
Cool. I mean, I do use Unsplash. There's a couple of others like that when I'm a bit stumped, but yeah. Good-o. Next one, prepare for update to the My to the new My Apps and My Account Experiences MC209920. This being that when you go through to the expanded view of your app launcher, or if you go through to the area where you can reset your password and change up whatever devices you're using and connected to Microsoft 365.
Or when you're invited as a guest into another tenant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all three. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The page is going to change. To be honest, like I looked at it, the page seems to be something I've been using for a while, but some of you might still be using the older classic page. It's going to change. It's going to change. What, you know what the impressive thing is here, Daniel, about when it's going to change?
I know. Tell me, Daryl, what is so impressive about when it's going to change?
It says experiences will change on July 20th, 2020
mm-hmm.
for everyone.
Everyone.
So it's not it's something.
A massive.
Yeah, it is like turned on, kaboom. There's no gradual rollout. It's there for you if you want to turn it on now. In fact, that's what they encourage you to do is get people involved in it now before you don't have a choice. But it's not a bad thing. I'm just saying that it's impressive that this is one feature they're going to just turn on. The other thing I'm impressed with here is, they've got – this is actually a really good message. It's actually quite informative.
I agree. Yes.
You can go down and you can see the difference between before and after. So I'm used to seeing that new profile experience. But the other thing I found was, there we go. Yeah, everything down the bottom in terms of resources, look at this. For communicating the update to your users.
We love it.
I want love that it. For every message.
Love.
Check it out. Customizable email templates. In fact, I did download. Let me find that. When you download the resources.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even showing.
Oh. No, it's not, Daryl.
Oh. Never mind. Okay.
I feel like you've wasted our time.
I have, but we did hear a nice humming tune. there's about like, you know, three or four different sheets, things you can use for posters, stuff and verbiage that you can use in email templates, graphics and guides, user guides about what to expect and how. All for this change. And I know that maybe... this is leveraging other stuff that has already been prepared and has been around for some time. So maybe that's the advantage. But wouldn't that be cool if we had that for every update, significant update that's going to impact users? Right. Email templates and guidance for how you're going to communicate this and something to support people.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, people didn't come along to hear us soon. Here's another one of those updated features which has been updated. There it is. Updated 24th of April. Secure by default. That one actually, you know, it had us scratching our heads last week. What is this? Secure by default. We're gonna do this thing with spam and let it go through to your junk mail folder.
Right. And we talked about and explained what it was doing, but yeah. This update is never mind. We're not doing that.
we have feedback.
We have feedback. We're not doing that. And they will put another announcement in the message center when they consider doing it again. Hopefully not the day after they actually start rolling it out. Anyway, so not next one up.
Say about that. Yeah.
Nope. Is a new feature, change in OneDrive and SharePoint files. Links created in Outlook for Windows. So we talk a little bit about what is Outlook for Windows. Is that an Outlook app? Is that the part of Pro Plus? Is that even called that anymore? But that's what it is. It's the application that's installed on your desktop. This is improving the readability of these links. Yes, for links that you share out. This will begin rolling out in mid-May, so in a little bit less than a month, completing in early June. So any long URL that you would be adding into Outlook for OneDrive or SharePoint will be automatically shortened to the name of the file, which is something we've gotten in Outlook for the web previously, Now we're getting an Outlook for Windows. Yes, yes, and yes. This is great functionality. I think, Daryl, I don't like seeing the three lines of goobly gunk that you get.
Goobly, goobly, goobly. Yep. Sounds like a episode two of Galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the character, but he cuts people off and blah, blah. Yeah, that is like that.
Yes, sure.
For years, I've just hyperlinked text and sort of thrown that over the top anyway. Now it does.
But this is so easy. You paste it in, it pastes that three lines, and then it goes, oh, I need to evaluate this, and it goes, and gives you a nice little experience. I love it.
The other thing it does is it checks to see if the recipients on that email have access to the file. Right. And if they don't, then it offers to change those permissions. Do you want to share this with people? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I'll do that. That could be interesting when it's someone in the message who's external and you've got a policy in your company that prevents that from happening. So I wonder what we'll see there. But it is a definitely a step in the right direction, and especially cosmetically. Tired of seeing long SharePoint links that aren't really that. It's like looking at a QR code to me.
Yes.
They're not that attractive. Right. Yeah, OneDrive. Next update. OneDrive for Business activity column has been retired. Again, this is another message where they did something in an updated publish date, update date. Some reason it's back again. So yeah, it's still there. Let's move on to the next
one. Still there. Yeah, moving right along. And this one is big. I think some people, especially, and I think we've got some people in chat would agree with me here. This is kind of big. Mm-hmm. Awareness, SharePoint Designer feature deprecation. This is MC210713. They've identified an issue with SharePoint Designer, and This issue is affecting when you're creating and editing custom forms within SharePoint Online. This is one of those features that SharePoint Designer gives us that people are still using. This, along with workflow, are kind of the reasons why we would use SharePoint Designer now in SharePoint. Basically, it causes issues, and because it does, they've decided that they've going to remove the ability to do it with SharePoint Online. So you're no longer able, as of 3 a.m. UTC on Saturday, April 25th, you're no longer able to create or edit custom forms in SharePoint Online using SharePoint Designer. I think this is, for me, I think it's kind of big in that they've taken away this functionality. They evaluate, we can't fix it, or we don't want to fix it. We don't want to invest in this, so we're pulling out. So you got to use Power Apps for your custom forms in SharePoint Online, or some other way of doing this. You can use JavaScript and others. The big thing here for me, not beyond the, well, you've just removed about half the reasons why you would use SharePoint Designer, but the big thing is the note at the bottom is that SharePoint Online Classic users. So if you're using SharePoint Online Classic and SharePoint Online, I think for the Venn diagram of people that are using SharePoint Designer to customize forms and people that are using SharePoint Classic, there's a huge overlap there, I feel. They will have to temporarily switch to the modern experience to access Power Apps. So this is not just I've got to just use Power Apps now. No, you've actually got to switch to modern. Now, this could be temporary, but still, you've got to do some things. So just be aware, if this is what you're doing, you are going to have to touch your sites to be able to use SharePoint Designer, to use Power Apps in this way.
Do you think that there's a lot of people that are using SharePoint Designer?
I have some good information that there's a lot of people out there getting training on how to use SharePoint Designer.
Getting training.
So the answer is yes, Daryl. There are a lot of people still, and I still get a lot of hits on my site for SharePoint Designer content of posts that I've used way back when. So short answer, yes, Daryl.
That's one way to move the audience along. Something's broken. We won't fix it.
Right.
Updated feature, Microsoft Forms collaboration permissions and co-authoring. That's MC210715. This is, what was this catch about this? About just setting the permissions on the forms. If I shared this with you, Daniel, within my organization, and you become a co-author, you're not the owner of the form, but all of a sudden you have permission to change those permissions. And I might not necessarily want that. I want your input, but I don't want your control.
Right.
And I'm okay with it. You know, we're friends and all, but if you weren't friends with your co-author, you were colleagues.
Right. Yes. So form owners will see this new collaboration option when navigating to share. I think for me, I'm seeing attention being provided to forms in this sharing experience. I actually think it's been a great sharing experience, but to be able to get this, you know, co-author experience is great.
So that's the first part of it. Second part of it was, you actually covered the second part. The first part of it was modify permission levels for collaboration.
I'm efficient.
Yeah, only users in this org to users with an Office 365 account.
Mm-hmm.
Is that specific?
Yes.
Lastly, Microsoft Bookings is going to become an official app. That's MC210708. Not just an add-in, but an app. It's if you don't know what it is, it's a web form in a way that you can dress up being able to book my time. It's an attached to your mailbox, and it's we've actually started to use it as a way of saying hello customers. You can get in touch with us and see our availability in certain parts of our calendars. But it's becoming a service that anyone can use. In fact, it says on by default. So if you don't want it to be on by default, then turn this off at the time that you need
to. It's on by default for E3 and E5 licenses and will be deployed mid-May.
It's an interesting service. When they say on by default, to make any sense of it actually takes a bit of setup. You're setting up things like, these are the hours I'm available. Do I want any buffer time either side of this booking? What do I want people to see? Do I, use some standard branding and logos and things like that? There's a bit to setting it up. So to turn it on by default, I think people need a bit of guidance.
Yes, Daryl, and I think this is the perfect example of why people need to be watching our show and listening to the podcast, because this is an announcement where you need to prepare for this change. It's going to be on by default, and just like you said, there's some things to set up here. There's some education that needs to go on, so make sure that you're paying attention to this one. This one's big.
Yep.
In those regards. Yep.
In those regards. And that was the show. So, it's good to have you all along.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We appreciate it.
All right. We'll catch you again. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Join us poolside and dive into the detail when we interview experts about upcoming updates and changes. And now, an audio podcast exclusive interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the deep dive segment of the 365 Message Center show. This is Daniel Glenn. And today we are talking all about the updates coming to the Power Platform in the data loss prevention area. And today I'm joined by Microsoft MVP, Vlad Cotonescu. How are you, Vlad?
Hey, Daniel, I'm doing great and really excited to be on this show. How about yourself?
I'm doing quite well. Can you please, for the 4 or 5 people in the world that don't know who you are, could you please introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about you?
Sure. So hello, everyone. My name is Vlad Catrinescu. I'm a Microsoft MVP in Office 365, whatever they call it now, from Montreal, Canada. I also have a few books out there, most recent one on PowerShell for Office 365. I'm also an author for Pluralsight and currently work as a product evangelist at a company called Valo Intranet. And that's the short version. I know that Dan keeps making fun of me that I can talk about myself for 30 minutes, but I'm not going to do it this time.
Good. Thank you very much. But do you sleep at all? It sounds like you do a lot of things. I'm just wondering.
So during the weekend, that's the goal, especially with the stuff going on now that you can't even go outside and do any fun activities. Why not?
Right. I'm
backing sleep now so I can do more stuff when everything is open back.
Sure. Well, this update, thanks for joining us and talking with us about this update. This is MC210568. And again, this is the data loss prevention updates for the Power Platform. First off, I wanted to say that this is specifically calling out connectors for Power Apps and Power Automate. We know that the Power Platform includes Power BI, but not seeing that mentioned at all in this update. Can you maybe give us a high level of what's going on with this change and just give kind of an introduction as to what's going on here?
Sure. So before I deep dive, let me take just one step back. Something that Microsoft actually introduced in the past 6 months is the Power Platform Admin Center. If we look at how we managed the Power Platform before, we had a Microsoft Flow, or now Microsoft Power Automate Admin Center, a Power Apps Admin Center, a Power BI Admin Center, and a Dynamics 365 Admin Center. So what Microsoft did was like, hey, why do we allow people to manage environments in the Power Automate Admin Center and in the Power Apps Admin Center when they're the exact same thing? And same thing for the data policies. We could create them from one of three admin centers, but it was the exact same thing you'd create in the back. So what they did is they created this new admin center called the Power Platform Admin Center, from which you can actually do the activities that cover all of the different Power Platform products. The Power BI actually keeps its own admin center, so that one will not be 100% rolled in the Power Platform Admin Center. So that's why I don't think it's included in this mention, since Power BI connects to different types of data in a way,
right,
versus Power Apps and Power Automate. So I think they're keeping that one apart.
That comment was talking about Power Platform DLP, and thank you for being specific about that, because I think that's what I was trying to call out, is just we're not talking about Power BI here, and so just wanted to make that point. So thank you.
Yeah, we're talking about everything except Power BI today, and Power Virtual Agents. Don't forget that product.
Yes, we won't.
Back to our topic of data policies, or data loss prevention policies, as you might see it called in different ways. I think I have time to do a quick introduction to what they are, Daniel.
Sure.
Okay. So to do a quick introduction to what data policies were before, as that introduction is still valuable to what they are today. So what data policies allowed us to do before was to separate connectors into two different groups. The first group was called business data only. The second group was called no business data. Now those naming don't mean anything really. They're just to help you. But for more technical people, think of them as group A and group B. Forget the label on them. You have two different groups in which you can put connectors. What the data policy did was simply that connectors from group A could not talk to connectors from group B. So meaning that you cannot have a flow that has, like, so you have SharePoint in group A and you have Twitter in group B. You could not have a flow or a Power App that would have both the SharePoint connector and the Twitter connector in the same flow or Power App. That would not work. But let's say you had Twitter and OneDrive personal in group B, you could still create the flow that would have that would tweet every time you upload something to your personal OneDrive. So they could talk to connectors in the same group as them, but they could not, you could not have a flow or a power wrap with connectors from both sites. Does that make sense, Daniel?
Sure does. Yep.
Awesome. So what were some of the things missing from what we had before? So let's say I gave the example of Twitter, how you could still use it with OneDrive Personal because they were in the same group. But what if you just don't want people to use Twitter? Or what if there are some connectors that you don't want to use? So the availability to actually block a connector fully was not there before. So that's one of the things that got introduced in this update, the ability to actually block connectors. And I want to be very specific. You cannot actually block all of the connectors. There's some limitations on what you can block. So what you cannot block are Microsoft provided or Microsoft owned standard connectors. So that means you cannot block, for example, the SharePoint connector. You cannot block the OneDrive for Business connector because they're a standard level connector and the service is provided by Microsoft.
Yeah. However, and that makes sense, right? Because it is a Microsoft provided service. It is in your tenant. So, you know, we're really talking about, do you want to block connectors that are outside of your tenant, you know, communication that is outside of Microsoft's control?
You can actually block premium Microsoft connectors.
Right, yes.
So for example, Azure, HTTP connector, what was it, that one? SQL Server, you can block those.
But that's really, I would think, as a more of a licensing issue thing, yeah, than not a data ownership kind of issue, right?
Yes, that is correct. It's more for licensing and for third-party connectors. So all of the third-party, you can block both standard and premium connectors. So that as soon as it's a third-party service, you can block it.
Right. So I feel like the ability to block connectors, and again, I'm talking about both premium connectors as well as those external services, is huge. I think it's a big deal. And I know some organizations have been waiting to roll out Power Automate and Power Apps until this was available because they really couldn't control. Like you said, it wasn't that you were saying when you put in the non-business or that group B, as you called it, it wasn't that they couldn't use it. It's just that they couldn't communicate with group A. Do you see this kind of as a roadblock? And it, with it being removed, organizations now starting to use the tools more? Is it really safer, you know, for organizations to come out and play with the connectors?
So, I mean, I think a lot of organizations that really needed the tool, what they did is they just had to put a lot more monitoring in. So they basically had to, there's PowerShell modules for Power Apps and Power Automate. So they just needed to have those scheduled tasks run a lot more. If they wanted to have the service enabled, it would have taken a lot more time investment. But now that roadblock is out of the way, I think, of course, organizations that were blocked by this will now be able to go forward. I think this is probably also a requirement for GCC or other higher security services. That's probably where a lot of the demand came from. So, yeah, I think this will unblock a lot of the adoption. And I wouldn't really call it adoption. I'll block it. It will take away reasons for IT to block those services. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, and I think that's anything that gets us a little bit closer to being able to set up the service the way we want it, you know, and it be easier, you know, to manage and be able to say for sure, 100%, our users can't use this service X because it has been deemed a service that, you know, would be a data leakage or, you know, an issue for us. Yeah. So that brings me, though, to my next question. Are there any connectors that you think organizations should seriously consider blocking initially, or at least seriously take a look at and make sure that there is a business need for those connectors?
I mean, of course, everything social media, but it's really tough, Daniel, to give you an exact list. And the reason is that, so let's take social media, for example, right? It can be very useful for marketing people, but do you want this to run in the same environment as where you have employee information, as an example? So this is where the environments come in, where you can have different environments for different people, different type of data.
And when you say environments, let's be specific about what you're talking about, environments.
Yes. So let me take a step back. Environments are like containers that you can actually separate your apps, workflows, and your CDS entities, so databases in. And what you can do is you can have multiple of those environments or containers in your tenant, and then you can apply different data policies to each specific environment. This way, let's say you have one where marketing creates their automation, and then you can allow Twitter, Facebook, Buffer, MailChimp in there. And then you can have one where your HR people have automations around employee onboarding, and you can block connectors in that environment. And again, there is no single best practice on how many environments, how you should split them off, but you could have them by department. You can even have them by country. If you're a multinational organization, you can have an environment for your European branch that's hosted in the EU data centers, and you can have one in the US hosted in the US data center. So that gives you a lot of flexibility for managing the whole Power Platform.
But it does require for you to do some planning. So I thank you for covering those environments, because I think a lot of people don't know that environments exist, or that you could set up multiples and have them set that way and then use DLP in conjunction with them. So it's not like you're saying, for my organization, if we turn off Twitter, that means no one can use Twitter, period. Well, we can do that in that environment, but in another environment, we can have a different, a different setting. I think for, taking a look at connectors, if you don't have, this is one way, not exclusively, but this is one way that you need to be preventing people from using shadow IT, really to maybe siphon off some of your information. So that you can have some governance around it. It's not saying, no, you can't do that. It's let's do it in the right way. So maybe blocking those connectors that really you don't, there's no official licensing for, that maybe you shouldn't, you don't want people going out buying a license for Salesforce or something else and then going, and then them connecting all of your company data into that. Well, that's a different cloud. Right. And is it secure? Does it meet your requirements for data sovereignty? Does it meet your requirements for security? All of that. So I would say consider those services that, you don't have official guidance or governance around. Right.
And I think something that Dropbox as well, and things like that, file storage, Google Drive, and you're right. A lot of those third party services that you can block them now. So users don't have access to them at all, even for personal use, let's say.
Right. So connectors, great, fantastic. That's only part of actually this update. There's another part is the announcement on the Power Platform Admin Center's capabilities. So given the details that were given here and actually the updates, I know you've been playing around a little bit on the Admin Center side. What are you most excited about and why for these updates?
So I think is having everything in one single location and not having to have four different ways to configure the same thing. And I think just having everything in the same location. And also they really refresh the user interface in the Power Platform Admin Center. So it's a lot cleaner.
And they needed it.
they needed it. Yeah.
Yes.
So a lot cleaner, a lot more tutorial based, like say, kind of, okay, next step, rather than just kind of throw you in there and you have to figure it out. And I mean, for us consultants, in a way, that do it for multiple clients and it's our job to keep up to date, in a way, it's a lot easier. But for more normal admins that maybe they're kind of an admin for everything Microsoft 365 in their organization, like, yay, another non-documented admin center that I just have to figure out.
Yeah, I get that. So the third update is about HTTP connector parity. Is this a big deal? What is going on here with this parity for, you know, HTTP, the webhook, all of that?
So I'm not sure how much of a big deal I should make out of it. And the reason is that, you know, I'm a PowerShell guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right. The thing is, before we had this update, in order to be able to add the HTTP connector to your groups, you actually had to create the DLP policy using PowerShell. So if an admin that, again, I'm a normal admin, I don't do this day to day in the Power Platform, I create my DLP policy using the UI, and then somebody tells me, Vlad, you have to add the HTTP connector. Oh, well, because I didn't originally create it with PowerShell and the right parameters, I now have to create a new one with PowerShell and do everything all over again. Because if you didn't create it with PowerShell, you could not add the HTTP connector. So you imagine how much of a pain that was for normal admins. But now it's there out of the box in the UI. No more PowerShell needed for the HTTP connector.
No more PowerShell. You've heard it here first from Vlad.
Did you hear the however?
No, I didn't. I was already talking.
So no more PowerShell needed for the HTTP connector. However, for your custom connectors, so if you built custom connectors for your organization, it's PowerShell only still. So you still need to learn PowerShell for the Power Platform to be able to manage custom connectors in DLP. So it's...
Do you see that changing in the future? I personally think so, right? That
think so? Yes.
Yeah. But not yet, definitely.
Yeah, definitely not yet. And remember, this is still in preview right now.
Right.
So if your organization has a policy to not use preview stuff, mm-hmm. You can still create the stable version from the Power Apps or from the Power Automate admin centers. If you create it from the Power Platform admin center with the ability to block connectors, you're still in preview. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it will be there. But at the same time, they might leave it as an advanced PowerShell only feature, because the way that the actual wizard interface that I talked to you right now is, you select the connectors first and then you select to which environment you put them in. But a connector can only be deployed to one environment or the other, right? So there's so much flexibility in how custom connectors can be deployed. And you need advanced technical knowledge to deploy custom connectors. So it might be a PowerShell only thing. And we know Microsoft has quite a few of those PowerShell only settings.
Most certainly. There's when we're talking about Microsoft 365, typically what happens is something gets released and it's PowerShell only, and then eventually it comes into the UI. But that there are exceptions to that rule, and there are many things that we can only do via PowerShell. So I think this could be one of those, that those custom connector management could just be PowerShell from now on.
Yeah.
Anything you think we left out that we need to discuss about this?
I think just a quick reminder is mm-hmm. that, remember, when you create a new DLP policy, every flow, and recently Power App, it's only been the case for 1 week, that goes against that policy will get disabled. So
right, yes. We talked about that last week on the show, that, and it's a good thing, you know, that... Yeah. when you put in a DLP, it actually is in effect for those artifacts that you've already created.
Yes. So it was always the case for Power Automate, so for flows, but not for Power Apps. But now it's in effect for both of them. So make sure to either run your own PowerShell scripts and create your own reports. If not, there's an open source solution done by the Power Platform team called the Center of Excellence. You can find it on GitHub, and I'm sure we can share a link in the resources.
We'll put it in the show notes. Yep.
This way you can actually, they have what they call a playground. So you can actually drag and drop connectors into different groups, except the blocked one. They do not have the blocked one yet, but that could tell you which Power Apps would be affected by it. So you can go to the makers and see what is that Power App needed. And if it's needed, maybe it's a use case to have more environments so you can better manage your policies. But yeah, however you do it, make sure to check with your makers. Make sure to look at the Power Apps and flows you have in your environment, because if you mistake one of them, and I'll give you a funny story of something I recently did in my own test environment. I was creating a data policy, and I put SharePoint in there. I have OneDrive for Business. I kind of looked at all of the Microsoft services. I was like, okay, I'm set to go. Click on publish, everything works. Come back a few hours later, all of my flows are disabled. I forgot the approvals connector.
Nice.
So it's things like that yes. you don't necessarily think at, or you forget they exist. And if you forget them, the flows will be disabled. So yeah, really important to actually document what you have before you apply it.
Well, and I think that's a great point to make. You need to work with your users, right? We identify the flows and the apps that are utilizing these connectors before we turn them off. We talk to the makers and we work out, hey, this is going to happen. It's not a, it may be, hey, let's talk about it. Should it be disabled or not? But it, you know, a lot of times it's going to be, we're going to disable this and it's going to break stuff. Let's talk about when we're going to do it and make sure that it's not disruptive to the organization. So thank you very much, Vlad, for really calling out a lot of details here and helping our listeners be able to manage this change that's coming up. Speaking of listeners, how can our listeners connect with you online?
Sure. So I blog at vladtalkstech.com. That's the easiest way. If not, I'm also on Twitter. It's at Vlad Catrinescu. It's super easy to spell. I'm sure Daniel could spell it right away.
We'll put it in the show notes.
What I usually tell people is that if you type in Vlad and you follow a bunch of other SharePoint people, the Twitter AI magic should work, and you'll see my face under somewhere. But yeah, Vlad Catrinescu on Twitter. And also check out my courses on Pluralsight. Just search for, I think I'm the only Vlad there doing courses. So I'll say search for Vlad, and for sure there's not many of us in there. So easiest way to reach out to me.
Yeah. And also Vlad will be a speaker for the upcoming Office 365 event for Nashville. So you can register for free at 0365nashville.org and attend his session for free, talking all about certifications, right, Vlad? So
yes, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So please join us there. But again, thank you so much, Vlad, for joining today and helping our listeners really understand this change.
Well, thank you for having me, Daniel, and have a great week.
Bye-bye, everyone.